My Lola, the River by Melissa Sippin. My Lola always begins with this. I remember the sky. The sky is red, orange, an expanse of blood, purple gradient entangled in twilight in the moment between night and day when the sun is at the edge of the horizon. A dash of hope. No, revise that. A dash of everything. It holds the screams. It holds the horizon. It is still. It stops everything. It burns. Everything is always burning in her memories. She tells me of the time she stood on white shores, an ocean away from here, and saw the sky become red. My Lola is in a white dress. Her sisters stand behind her. Her skin is olive and scarred by the wind, her legs sinking in the sand beneath her. Her small frame and long black hair glimmers against the sea. How old is she? She is 20, 21, unmarried, a dalaga, the age she eloped somewhere in the mountainside, the same age I eloped halfway across the world. Roars flare above her, engines afire, burning. There are gushes of wind, hot air spit from war jets, the sky erupting in sound. The sky is eating. There are bullets piercing the sky. There are dogfights. The Americans versus the Japanese. The Filipino versus the Japanese. Devouring each other's metal flesh. The Philippine plains are falling, swallowed by the sea. They're weak, the hand-me-down. She sees a silver plane soaring above the jungle, the rough foliage, and it rises to air just at the wave's surface. It swoops up, it evades the white plane with a red sun painted on its side, it twirls, flips, somersaults. The American planes keep shooting, the Japanese planes keep shooting. I don't know if my grandmother cried, but she tells me her sisters yell at the top of their lungs, their arms lifted, the voices shrill as a wing to the bat. They scream and scream and scream, kill them, kill them, kill them, save us. They throw their bodies on the wet sand, press their backs against the wet earth. Save us. They spread their arms, their legs, open their blouses, hands clenching their chests. Save us. The silver plane invades an American plane, and the white, red, sun plane chases it like a wild boar hunting its prey, and the American plane guns down the whole area. The machine guns dance, the air rumbles, it spits, it shrills, it devours everything, its belly expanding, collapsing, the sound explodes against the surface of the bluest water until my grandmother and her sisters cover their blood-soaked, ruptured ears. They see the white sun plane burst aflame. They see the silver plane evade the ball of fire. The American planes keep shooting. They're always shooting, she tells me. The silver plane encircles the flames until it gets caught by another round of gunfire and down it soars to the pit of the ocean, erupting the sky in the most beautiful colors. The sisters roar. The sisters scream. My grandmother says, this is when he died. Who, I ask. I am unsure. Anak, did you know I loved someone before your Lolo? He was my first fiancé. This is how my memory replays this moment. She glances toward the sea. We stand near the seagulls, burying their heads in the sand. We're facing the Pacific, but it's thousands of miles across the dogfight of her memories. I grab her hand. She pulls away, walks toward the horizon, the end of the world. Behind us is the Redondo Beach Pier, loud and happy. Her palms are spread open, spread apart, like she is expecting the sun. It is sunset. The seagulls cry out. They fly above us and they soar, white birds calling us home. I follow her in her white, dastard dress, so colorful like the gradients of flowers. Her chinelas begin to bury in the sand. She falls to the ground on her knees, unable to speak, and there are no tears but the fractures of her youth engulfing her. I must have been 6 or 7, or I don't remember. Maybe I am 8. My own memories are blurred, burnt. My youth was a pit of fractures. I pretend to reach my hands into my skull to pull them out. Instead, I pull out white birds with the reddest eyes. They float above my palms like clouds. I am awash in the waves of their cries, "Save us! Save us!" It is my grandmother who pulls me away from the black cavern, this endless grave, this fractured repository. Erasure is violent. It's a perpetual burning. My grandmother now clasps my hands really close to her body, against her chest, against her beating heart. I am on my knees, now I am laying my head on her lap. The seagulls still beck and call to us. I look up and I see the happy pier in the distance. I hear the mariachi band play a melody that sinks into the sky, flutters our ears, fills us like water. We are humming along with our Mexican friends, and then suddenly, my grandmother, my mama Pacine, lifts my chin and tells me her first confession of the life I was not part of, that I do not understand, that cements her as unknowable, that proves her life was always only hers. "I was supposed to marry a pilot child," she says. "Did you know that? Oh, he was so handsome, just like your Lolo." I want to understand, but I don't. I am still a child. I just listen. He was from the Philippine American Academy, just like my grandfather Diego. But unlike him, he was from a well-known family, a rich Chinese mestizo from the distant side of Dulai. He was my grandmother's cousin and someone my great-grandfather approved of. Lolo Isidro was the mayor of Arangay, a small barrio at the western edge of Ilocosur. And as my Lola says, your great Lolo had a reputation to protect. Her first love graduated as a cadet from the academy. He was so popular, dashing, not at all her type. I ask her why. She sighs. "When the war came, I was not afraid, child. I escaped to the mountains and eloped with Diego instead. Because I wanted to. Because I could. I don't know what it was about your Lolo. It wasn't his long love letters. I thought they were too semantic. It wasn't his stubbornness. I laugh at this." She continues. "No one is more stubborn than Uncle, child, than me." She lifts her dasher dress, the one with all the violet flower imprinted on her chest to her legs. Maybe it was his gusto. He could never take no for an answer. "No, that is not it, Anak. No, no. He was an orphan mestizo, a child born into the worst circumstances, dead parents, an elder sister the whole village knew about. It was his thirst, endless, hollow like the husk inside the coconut. Thirst not just for me, but for life. He wasn't boring, my daughter. He was against my father's wishes." She continues, "But even now, I'm sad. I see that silver plane drowning. I can't see my cousin's face, but I imagine it. At night, I always can see it." "What does he look like?" I ask her. "There, you see the sun? It is like the sun. A blaze, a deep cavity, eyes of black pits. I can even smell his flesh, sometimes at night, only when it is especially dark." I look around us. The seagulls approach us, crowding our bodies in a circle, their wings flapping, their chirps screeching. I wonder if she cried then, as we sat on the beach thousands of miles away from Arangay, looking at the same ocean which faces that burnt, war-torn, awash shore. She carries me all the way to the sidewalk, up the hill, towards the pier, and in my memories, I am the one crying. I am the one filled with sorrow. I am the one shrieking like the birds. "Don't abandon me," I say between my childish sobs. "Don't leave me, please. Not like my mother. Lola, Lola, Mama Pacine, hear me, see me. Please." My Lola had just finished her disappearing act on the beach, had just stopped beating her chest, her ritual chant, "Diosco, dear father, art in heaven, take me now, take me now." She looks at me quietly. "Anak, child, sometimes the only thing I ever wanted in this life was to die."